Welcome to Talking Translations by Literature Ireland. We have a short story from John O'Donnell today called Almost the Same Blue, the title story from his recent collection. He is joined by a celebrated Croatian translator, Mia Pervan, who has translated John Banville and Sebastian Berry, among many others. John O'Donnell's work has been published and broadcast widely in Ireland and abroad. Fiction publications include Counterparts with the Stinging Fly and the Hennessy Book of Irish Fiction. He has also published 4 poetry collections, the latest of which is Sunlight, New and Selected Poems from Daedalus Press. Awards include the Hennessy Award for Emerging Fiction and the Irish National Poetry Prize. John's first collection of short stories, Almost the Same Blue, was published by Dura Press in May 2020. Senior counsel practicing at the Irish Bar, he lives in Dublin. So here is John O'Donnell reading Almost the Same Blue.
Almost the same blue. You recognize it immediately, the imitation silver teddy bear dangling from its cheap chain. There is a torn scrap of paper in the envelope as well, an unknown phone number scrawled in biro. "Please, no, Olivia," says Donald when you tell him. "But you insisted we should follow up on everything," you say to him, the man who'd been your husband when it happened almost 2 years ago. "No stone unturned, remember? You said." There is a silence on the other end of the phone. "She's gone, Olivia," Donald says eventually. You imagine him slowly shaking his head. "You need to learn to grieve," he says. You hang up and weigh the pendant in your hand, thinking that to grieve would be a kind of treason. And although Donald has suggested that you contact the police about the envelope, you know you will not go back to the airless torpor of the station, the weary face of Lahan, the heavyset detective, who said 6 months ago that scarce resources meant the investigation was being scaled back. So you tell no one else, although you ring the number just in case, and when it eventually rings out, you are almost relieved. But the second time, it answers. The new notes come slickly from the machines. 12 withdrawals, 12 different ATMs. It takes 3 days, but this is how he wants it. The voice who gives you the instructions in almost perfect English. You say her name and ask to speak to her, and you hear him shouting in another language to someone else, wherever he is answering your call, before he replies, "Right now, that is not possible, but soon." You ask, "Is she all right?" Your heart lunging in your chest. "Yes, yes," he says impatiently. And then he talks again about the money and where and when he'll meet you. "And no police, yes?" he says. And for a moment, the jumbled syntax confuses you before you agree. "No police," he says again, "or no girl." In the early evening, you wait for him at the bypass. He is younger than his voice suggests, the brown-eyed man who pulls up in the van. You show him the pendant and the holdall with the plastic shopping bag inside it, stuffed with money, and he nods and reaches over, opening the passenger door. Underneath his denim jacket, his T-shirt says, "Just do it," and the ashtray is a cairn of butts. The rear of the van is stacked with empty cages, dozens of them smeared with droppings, and the plume from the cigarette that's wedged between his fingers cannot hide the feral stink. You ask him about her. "Soon," he says, pointing out through the front windscreen at the way ahead. And your hands tighten on the holdall as the van rattles along narrow country roads, the cages clattering in the back. Taller, you think. She will definitely be taller. And blonde, yes, still blonde. But that coat she'd been wearing, the one you and Donald chose for her together, her favourite, the brown fake sheepskin with the flower-embroidered sleeves, the one in all the posters, that coat probably no longer fits her. At the outskirts of a Midland town, the van veers off into a housing estate. In the twilight, children are playing on a green area littered with the bones of long-dead machinery. And out of habit, you lean forward to look at them more closely to see if you can recognise her. The van drives into a crescent and stops outside the furthest house. The young man points to the front door but does not follow you. And when you press the doorbell, a shape comes towards you on the far side of the frosted glass and you hear the clicking of the latch. The woman answering the door is older than you, a hank of steel-grey hair, the greases on her face like hunting trails on an ancient map. Again you show the pendant and the holdall, and she ushers you in through the narrow hallway, past the closed door of a living room from which you can hear low voices and the sound of a television, a game show in full swing. You follow the woman down into the kitchen. Crusted dishes fester in the sink. The wall behind the cooker is stained with grease. On the windowsill, a radio is playing country and western, the rich Mississippi baritone of Charlie Pride, wondering, is anyone going to San Antone? The woman pulls a chair out from the table and motions you to sit. So where is she? You ask, your voice louder than you'd intended. The woman shakes her head, pretending not to understand. Here, you say, lifting the holdall onto the table and shaking it. Here, look. Please, the woman says. She calls out through the doorway, and from upstairs a voice answers in a language you do not recognize. The woman closes the door and sits down opposite you. We wait, she says, and she smiles quickly at you before she looks away. A pair of child's jeans are hanging over the back of a chair. Folsom Prison Blues is playing, Johnny Cash twanging away on the guitar. The grimy window where the radio sits gives out onto a small back garden. The light is almost gone, but you can make out an upturned tricycle on an unkempt patch of grass. At the end wall there is a wooden shed, the door bolted and padlocked, with the window covered by what looks like wire mesh. The woman is bent over her phone, its icy glow reflected in her face. In the distance, a car revs up, backfires, and pulls away. Christine, you say to her. No day passes without you saying it, repeating it to yourself, as if naming your loss could fill the space that's left behind, a space widening and deepening since that moment in the shopping mall when you turned around to find your daughter gone. You rustle the contents of the holdall again, and the woman looks up. Her name is Christine, you say. Did you know that? A dog is barking somewhere among the houses in the estate. It barks and barks and barks, and then it stops. Christine, the woman repeats carefully, nodding. Yes, she says, then, returning to her phone. Now Patsy Cline comes on, singing Crazy. Half listening, you peer again out at the shed. There is a ledge beside the window, with a little opening guarded by a grill, and you are wondering what this could be for when you see a movement in behind the shed. Patsy is belting it out, her voice freighted with anguish and despair. Another flicker, and another. Something is alive out there in the shed. You stand up, pushing back your chair, and the woman's eyes widen in alarm. Please, she says, making the flattening gesture with her hand. Calm down, this is under control. I just want, you say, spluttering as you point out the window, out towards the bottom of the garden. No, no, the woman says, rising to her feet. Please, lady, she says, and her hand is still outstretched, when the door from the hall into the kitchen opens, and a girl is standing in the doorway, with yellow hair falling over the shoulders of her coat, a fake sheepskin with flowers on the sleeves. And Patsy's in the zone, crooning about loneliness and the blues. The woman looks at you and gestures almost proudly at the girl. Your daughter, she says. How often have you imagined this? How many times have you tried to will this moment of reunion into being? Your daughter running towards you, hurling herself at you as you pull her in, inhaling her, her hair, her breath, her skin. You step towards her, your arms held wide in welcome, waiting for her, your lungs gasping for air since you are briefly unable even to speak. The girl hesitates, then scampers over to the woman and wraps herself around her, her face pressed in against the top button of the woman's jeans. The woman shrugs, a wordless half-smile at you, children, huh? And bends to whisper into the girl's ear, eyeing as she does the hold-all on the table. The girl turns towards you in a slow and doubtful pirouette. The woman gives her a nudge, and the girl edges across the kitchen. Tentatively, she leans into you, her face gingerly touching your waist, and as you close your arms around her, immediately you know. Now Patsy's lush contralto starts winding up for the big, tear-filled finish. You stroke her hair, feeling its brittleness, its dryness, the strands coarsened by the cheap blonde dye which is already growing out. The woman says something quickly, something you do not understand, and in response the girl slides her reluctant hands further around your waist. You bend to nuzzle her, seeing the dark roots at the crown of her head, and you try to breathe her in, although you know you will not recognize the slightly musty odor of this girl, the stale tang of her breath. Outside, a pigeon comes wheeling in over the garden, a plump grey shape hovering over the shed before it lands. It perches on the little ledge, fluttering to itself. You hear another sound then, faint at first. It is the girl, whimpering, her bony shoulders juddering under her coat. You hold on even tighter as she wriggles, struggling to get away. You hold on for dear life until the girl wrenches herself free and rushes back across the kitchen, throwing herself against the woman who admonishes her quietly, trying to soothe her. But the girl will not let go. She sings out the final line, Patsy, holding that last crazy as she wrings out every ounce of heartbreak and regret. From the far side of the table, the woman looks at you and frowns, pausing for a moment before she yanks the bulging plastic shopping bag out of the holdall. "Now you must leave," she says. In the dusk, the pigeon leans against the grill. Inside the shed, the others jostle for position at the mesh. The grill opens, and the pigeon disappears. "Christine," you say, as you reach out towards her, a supplication, "please, take my hand." The girl whines again, clings more tightly than ever to the woman's waist. And even though you know, you keep on saying it over and over, like a prayer. "Christine," you say, to this girl with the wrong forehead and too high cheekbones and eyes of almost the same blue.
Mia Pervan is a celebrated translator living in Zagreb, Croatia. She translates from English and French into Croatian and has become well known in Croatia thanks to her translation of Le Petit Prince, or The Little Prince. Mia has translated many incredible writers, including George Orwell, Mathieu Senard, and Gustave Flaubert, and from Ireland, Sebastian Barry and John Banville. Just last year, Mia was given a Lifetime Achievement Award for literary translation by the Croatian Ministry of Culture. Mia is a previous bursary recipient of Literature Ireland, and we're very pleased she could translate this story for us. So here is Mia Pervan reading Almost the Same Blue in Croatian. Enjoy.
Iste plave. Smješta je prepoznaš. Imitacija medvjedića koji se njiše na jeftinom lancu. U omotnici je i komadić papira. I nepoznat telefonski broj nadrljan kemijskom. "Molim te, nemoj, Olivia," veli Donald kad mu to kažeš. "Ali ti si insistirala da govorimo o njemu. Tvome mužu, kad se to dogodilo. O čovjeku koji ti je bio muž prije zamalo 2 godine. Ni jedne nepretražene stope. Sjećaš li se? To si rekla." S druge strane žice tišina. "Nema je, Olivia. Nestala je," napokon će Donald. Zamišljaš ga kako polako odmahuje glavom. "Moraš naučiti tugovati," kaže on. A ti prekidaš razgovor i odmjeravaš privjesak što ga držiš u ruci, misleći da bi tugovati bila neka vrsta izdaje. I premda ti je Donald predložio da kontaktiraš policiju u vezi s omotnicom, znaš da nećeš poći natrag u zagušljivu nedjelotvornost policijske stanice. Da se nećeš suočiti s umornim licem krupnog detektiva Lehana, koji je prije 6 mjeseci kazao da manjak podataka znači da se istraga obustavlja. I onda ti to nikome ne kažeš. Iako nazivaš taj broj za svaki slučaj. I kad se na kraju veza prekine, tebi bude kao da ti je pao kamen sa srca. Ali sljedeći put oni ti odgovore. 12 puta na 12 različitih bankomata podizala je potpuno nove novčanice. To traje svaki put 3 dana. Ali on tako hoće, taj glas koji ti daje upute na gotovo savršenom engleskom. Kažeš mu njezino ime i da želiš s njom razgovarati, čuješ ga kako viče nekome na drugom jeziku, gdje god bio taj koji odgovara na tvoj poziv, prije nego kaže: u ovom trenutku to nije moguće, ali uskoro. Pitaš za nju: je li dobro? Srce ti treperi u grudima. Da, da, nestrpljivo kaže on, i onda opet govori o novcu i o tome gdje i kada će se sastati s tobom. I bez policije, da? Veli on. A tebe na trenutak zbuni ta zbrkana sintaksa prije nego pristaneš. Bez policije, ponovi on. Ili bez djevojčice. Rano ujutro čekaš ga na raskrižju. Mlađi je, no što bi se reklo, po glasu. Čovjek smeđih očiju, vozi kombi i zaustavio se. Pokazuješ mu privjesak i veliku torbu s plastičnom vrećicom punom novčanica i on kimne i nagne se i otvori vrata kombija. Pod traper jaknom ima majicu s natpisom "Samo daj", a pepeljara je groblje opušaka. U stražnjem dijelu kombija gomila praznih kaveza. Ima ih na desetke, prljavih od ptičjeg i kojekakvog drugog izmeta, a dim cigarete među njegovim prstima ne može prikriti taj životinski smrad. Pitaš ga gdje je ona. Uskoro, kaže on, pokazujući kroz vjetrobransko staklo na put pred sobom. A tvoje ruke čvrsto stežu veliku torbu, dok se kombi drmusa po uskim seoskim putovima, a od straga klopoću kavezi. Viša, misliš ti, sasvim sigurno će biti viša. I plavokosa, da, još uvijek plavokosa. Ali onaj kaput koji je imala na sebi, onaj što smo joj ga kupili, Donald i ja, njezin najdraži, od smeđe umjetne kože sa cvjetnim vezom na rukavima, taj će joj kaput vjerojatno biti premalen. Na kraju grada, iz unutrašnjosti, kombi skreće prema stambenom naselju. U sumrak, na zelenim površinama zatrpanim kostima mrtvih strojeva, igraju se djeca, a ti iz navike naginješ se prema naprijed da ih pobliže promotriš, da vidiš hoćeš li je prepoznati. Kombi ulazi u polukružni dio naselja i zaustavlja se pred najudaljenijom kućom. Mladić ti pokazuje kućna vrata, ali ne kreće za tobom. I kad pozvoniš, kroz zamagljeno staklo na vratima, vidiš kako ti ususret ide neki lik i čuješ škljocaj zasuna. Žena koja otvara vrata starija je od tebe. Ima pramen čelično sive kose i bore na licu nalik na kakvu staru kartu. Ti opet pokazuješ privjesak i veliku torbu i ona te pušta unutra u usko presoblje, vodite mimo zatvorenih vrata u dnevni boravak iz kojega čuješ tihe glasove i zvuk televizora i igru u punom jeku. Ideš za ženom dolje u kuhinju. Skorjeli tanjuri trule u sudoperu. Zid iza štednjaka punje masnih mrlja. Na prozorskoj klupici svira radio i zapadnjački glas, bogati misisipski bariton Charlie'a Pride'a, pita: ide li tko u San Antone? Žena izvuče stolac ispod stola i rukom ti pokaže neka sjedneš. A gdje je ona? pitaš ti glasnije no što si kanila. Žena odmahne glavom, pravi se da nije razumjela. Evo, kažeš, i podigneš torbu na stol i protreseš je. Tu je, pogledajte. Molim, dovikne žena iz predsoblja, a odozgor odgovara glas na jeziku koji ne prepoznaješ. Žena zatvori vrata i sjedne ti nasuprot. Pričekajmo, veli. I brzo ti se nasmiješi, a zatim pogleda u stranu. Dječje traperice vise preko naslona stolice. Svira Folsom Prison Blues. Johnny Cash drnda po gitari. Musavi prozor podno kojega stoji radio gleda na mali stražnji vrt. Gotovo se smračilo, no na neurednoj krpi trave nazire se preokrenut tricikl. Na kraju zida je drvena šupa zabravljena lokotom, na njoj je prozor zaštićen nečim nalik na žičanu mrežu. Žena se naginje nad mobitel, a njegova ledena svjetlost zrcalio je se na licu. U daljini auto stane turirati, zabruji kroz ispušnu cijev i krene. Kristin, govori joj, ne prođe ni dan da joj to ne kažeš, da to ne ponavljaš sama sebi, kao da bi imenovanje gubitka moglo popuniti ispražnjen prostor. Prostor koji biva sve širi, sve dublji od trenutka u shopping molu, kad si se osvrnula i ustanovila da ti je kći nestala. Opet šuškaš sadržajem velike torbe. Žena diže pogled s mobitela. Ime joj je Kristin, kažeš. Jeste li to znali? U naselju među kućama laje pas. Laje i laje i laje i potom prestane. Kristin, brižno ponovi žena, kimajući. Da, reče i vrati se mobitelu. Sad Patsy Cline pjeva Crazy. Na pol slušajući iznova baciš pogled na šupu. Pokraj prozora je nekakva izbočina, uzan otvor zaštićen rešetkom i ti se pitaš čemu bi to moglo služiti. Kad na jednom vidiš da se iza rešetke nešto pomaklo. Patsy pjeva što je grlo nosi. Glas joj pritišću tuga i očaj. Opet se nešto pomaklo iza žičane mreže. Jedan put, dva put, nešto živo u toj šupi. Ustaneš, odgurneš stolicu, a žena razrogači oči prestrašeno. Molim vas, kaže, uz umirujući pokret rukom, smirite se, sve je pod kontrolom. Samo želim, kažeš ti, upirući prstom izvan prozora prema kraju vrta. Ne, ne, veli žena ustajući. Molim vas, gospođo, kaže, ruka joj je još ispružena. Kad li se vrata otvore, te iz predsoblja što vodi u kuhinju, u dovratku vidiš, stoji djevojčica, žute kose koja joj pada na ramena kaputa od umjetne ovčje kože s cvijećem na rukavima. A Patsy i dalje pjevuši o osamljenosti i tuzi. Žena te pogleda i gotovo ponosno uspre prstom u djevojčicu. Vaša kći, kaže. Koliko si često zamišljala taj prizor? Koliko si puta nastojala prizvati taj trenutak ponovnog sjedinjenja? Ono, kći ti trči ususret, baca se na tebe, a ti je privineš k sebi Miriše kosu, dah, kožu. Sada, u znak dobrodošlice, raširenih ruku krećeš prema njoj. Hvataš dah. Na tren ni riječ ne možeš izustiti. Djevojčica se koleba, zatim jurne k ženi i obrlije. Pritisne lice o najgornje dugme na njezinim trapericama. Žena slegne ramenima, nasmiješiti se s bezglasnim poluosmijehom. Djeca, a? Sagne se, šapne nešto djevojčici u uho, očima pokaže prema torbi na stolu. Polaganom i sumnjičavom piruetom djevojčica se okrene prema tebi. Žena je malko gurne laktom i djevojčica polako prijeđe dužinu kuhinje. Nesigurno se nasloni na tebe, licem ti oprezno dodirne struk, a ti, grleći je, odmah znaš. Pacin, raskošni kontraalt, sprema se za veliki plačni finale. Ti gladiš djevojčicu po kosi, osjećaš da je krhka, suha, ogrubjela od jeftine boje za plavu kosu u kojoj se već nazire izrastak. Žena brzo izrekne nešto što ti ne razumiješ. Na to djevojčica protiv svoje volje još čvršće ovije ruke oko tvoga struka. Nagneš se da joj nosom dodirneš glavu. Spaziš tamni korijen kose. Pokušavaš upiti njezini miris. Premda znaš da nećeš prepoznati pomalo pljesni vonj te djevojčice, njezin odstajali zadah. Vani golub kruži nad vrtom. Debeljuškast, siv lik što lebdi iznad šupe prije nego što sleti. Nasadi se na izbočinu lepećući krilima. Tada začuješ drugi zvuk, isprva slabašan. To djevojčica trese ramenima ispod kaputa. Stegneš je još čvršće, a ona se migolji, otima se, želi se osloboditi. Ti je očajnički stežeš sve do trenutka kad se ona istrgne i jurne natrag kroz kuhinju te se baci na ženu koja je tiho prekori, a zatim pokuša smiriti, ali djevojčićin stisak ne popušta. Patsy pjeva završno crazy, izlači iz njega svaku mrvu bola i žaljenja. Žena stoji s desne strane stola, gleda u tebe i mršti se. Zastaje na tren prije no što iz torbe istrgne prepunu plastičnu vrećicu. Sad moraš ići, kaže. U sumrak golub se pripija uz rešetku. Unutra u šupi guraju se neki drugi likovi. Bore se za mjesto pred žičanom mrežom. Rešetka se otvori, a golub nestane. Kristin, kažeš ti, pružajući ruke prema njoj. Preklinješ je. Molim te, uhvati me za ruku. Djevojčica ponovno zacvili, čvršćeno ikada priljubi se uz ženin struk. A ti, premda znaš, ti ustrajno, opetovano ponavljaš. Kristin, govoriš djevojčici, drukčijeg čela i previsokih jagodica i očiju umalo iste plave boje.
Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to John O'Donnell, and thank you to Mia Pervin. If you'd like to read the English and Croatian versions of this story, visit literatureireland.com. Literature Ireland promotes Irish literary authors and their work worldwide and is funded by Culture Ireland and the Arts Council. Learn more about what we do at literatureireland.com. And if you'd like to say hello, my name is Lindsay, and you can email info@literatureireland.com. I'd be happy to reply. Look forward to further episodes with short stories and novels featured. Coming up, we have a special episode for St. Patrick's Day, as well as Adrian Duncan, Danielle McLaughlin, Lucy Caldwell, Michelle Gallen, and many more this spring. Until then, take care.